Deadwood Soundweb.
Okay, we're going to finish out all the Instagram videos from the junk drawer. This one is from June 24th. I just threw out to Instagram, ask me about any movie. I just took it from there. I wanted to talk about movies, and I was on a bit of a break from any kind of a podcast, and man, people did not let me down. I just had so many comments going across, and so we're going to listen to this, and then next week, we're going to start diving into all the Patreon stuff that I had stashed away that you had to pay for, and now you get for free. Enjoy. So I used to do a lot of movie podcasts. I only have one going right now. I've got one in my spare time, but I had to put it on hold. That will come up at the end of the summer, beginning of the fall, somewhere around there. I am jonesing for movie talk. I had to take the month off because I am about to start running a radio station. Weirdly enough, it's weird how my career path has kind of twisted and turned lately. Very happy about it. But as a result, I haven't had time to talk about movies and put it out onto podcasts. So I am just putting this out here. If you guys have any kind of movie you want me to talk about, throw it up there. And if I've seen it, I'll talk about it. If I haven't, I will just say, sorry, I haven't seen it. But I just want to keep it open for anybody who wants to comment. So I'll revisit this throughout the video. So if you've got any movie at all you want me to talk about, just bring it up while I'm waiting for you guys to figure out what you want to hear. I am going to talk about how I think the reason why there's so many multiversal movies right now, it's a very real reason that people haven't really thought about that much. And I find it kind of bizarre, but I just think it's because we went through this period for so many years of reboots. And there was always reboots, but it's just like now everybody's trying to order things. And with the internet, I think we're paying closer attention to franchises. And so I think a lot of writers are keying into that. We're seeing great ones like Everything Everywhere All at Once or Across the Spider-Verse. And we're seeing terrible ones as well. I don't have to list them. I'm sure you guys can fill in the blanks on those. But that's why I think we've gotten a reboot culture. So I'm seeing Milo here from Thomas Henry. I'm not sure what you mean by Milo. Are you talking about bad Milo, like the kind of puppet horror movie, or are you talking about The Adventures of Milo and Otis? I just want some clarifications on that, or it might be something entirely different that I just don't know. I will say The Adventures of Milo and Otis, my kids watched it a lot and I thought it was benign, and then I found out that it was a Japanese movie initially where they killed tons and tons of kittens and dogs, which was not cool. Like when you see them fighting against a bear, they're actually fighting against a bear and they're like, oh, need another Milo, need another Otis. So I find that movie just awful now, even though they just re-edited it and used footage. I think there's something kind of bad. So you're saying bad Milo. So I have to be honest. I am in theory totally down with bad Milo, but in practice, I bought the Blu-ray the other day and I just have it sitting on my shelf. So I actually own that movie. I just haven't gotten to watch it yet. I've got about 400 Blu-rays and I started collecting again. So I haven't gotten around to it, but I'm really excited to watch it. That guy from the state, I'm spacing on his name right now, but he's amazing, dude. I love that guy. Plays a blowhard really well. And I know it's like tied with anxiety, right? Okay, Killer Kid. I'm not familiar with that one. Let me see here. Black Mirror Season 6. Haven't jumped into Black Mirror Season 6 yet. I am like way behind on Black Mirror. And it's one of those ones I've always meant to catch up on, but I'm very behind. Okay, favorite fantasy. Really quick, Place Beyond the Pines. I haven't watched it yet. Definitely going to watch that one. Jake Gyllenhaal. Or no, it's not Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm sorry. Anyway, it's on my list to watch. Favorite fantasy? Honestly, it's The Princess Bride, and it's not even close. I love The Princess Bride so much. It was one of those movies that when I was a kid, my mom took me to it in the theater. I lived in Portland, Oregon at the time, and we were like, we don't want to see The Princess Bride. Like, I hadn't seen any commercials on TV. It was the 80s. She drugged me in there, and I was just like, I don't want to see this movie based off of the title, and I just love the movie. I remember Fred Savage coming out at the beginning of the movie, and we were one Wonder Years fans in our household. It had just started, so we were immediately tied in. And the fact that the kid was bitching about the book, The Princess Bride, I was like, yes, it immediately got on the wavelength. I love how it talks about fairy tales. The book is incredible, too. I just read the book two summers ago. I got around to reading that by William Goldman, who's a legendary screenwriter, and it's so good. There's a couple of things that haven't aged super well, like some talk about Spanish people as a negative and things like that, but still really, really good. And those interruptions of the book are in the story as well. So, okay, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, one of the best movies ever. Dude, I agree. I did a whole podcast on this for A Cosmic Void, an old podcast I did with Jeremiah, and we were super excited to cover that. I think the themes are really, really cool in Texas Chainsaw Massacre because it is about taking people through like cattle and showing the process of how animals are taken apart for us to eat and all the arguments around that. And people don't want to think about that when they watch a movie, but that is what the movie's about. It's utterly insane. It's horrific. And there's actually truly not that much blood spilt in it. There's definitely like blood on the walls and off the carcasses and things like that. But there's actually, it's not that violent, but it is definitely one of the most frightening movies I've ever seen. I love the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Let's see, coming of age movie. What's my favorite coming of age movie? Man, there's so many of them. I am like blanking on coming of age movies. I just kind of saw one right now. It's definitely not my favorite, but I saw No Hard Feelings, the Jennifer Lawrence movie. It's fun. Like if you like sex comedies, I think they have an interesting way of tackling it with the woman going after the man. And it has this commentary that really, really runs through it. Me being the last year of X, I kind of have that holdover from X, but also millennials. Like I see both points of view. They're ever so slight. Like we both hate boomers, right? No offense, boomers, but you know what you are. It was interesting watching the commentaries on Zoomers and talking about how they are with the phones and how they're slow to drive and like they don't hang out in public nearly as much as previous generations did. But then it also showed how they're a lot more attached to feelings and kind of cutting through stuff with conversation. And so I thought it was a really good look at both sides from that. Okay, Mike Lee, you're going to have to let me know what he did. Maybe I saw something. I do watch a lot of English films. While you're coming up with an example, John Carpenter's The Thing, dude, totally still holds up. That is one of my all-time favorite movies. If you go on my Letterboxd account, so it's one of my four favorites. It's like that, Get Out, The Godfather 2. Fight Club is, but it's Fight Club has such a bad rep behind it because I guess a lot of incel kind of dudes really hold up Fight Club and they like to throw out the third act and pretend like it didn't matter. But John Carpenter's The Thing is amazing. That is a movie that I also talked about on the same podcast, A Cosmic Void. I think it's timeless because those effects are practical and they're freaky. But furthermore, the themes of the movie are about paranoia and we will always be paranoid about something. That was a movie that I loved when I was a kid. I saw it way too early and just remembered the ending and loved the ending to death of that movie. I won't get into it in case people haven't seen it. You should really check out that movie. But I will say it was one of those ones I loved as a kid and I'd always ask people if they'd seen it. Nobody had ever seen it. Being a teenager, I had a couple of friends that saw it and thought it was awesome, but not very many people. And in my 20s, some more people started to see it. By my 30s, a lot of people saw it and it became a classic. And now in my 40s, it's like still a classic. I mean, during the pandemic, it had a resurgence because you didn't know who you could trust with COVID and things like that. Like whether you're into vaccinating or not, or whether you're believing that somebody has COVID or not, like somebody comes into work and starts coughing, like there's this paranoia everywhere. So as long as there's paranoia, The Thing is going to be relevant. I know at the time it was probably tying in with the Soviet Union quite a bit because we were afraid of spies constantly. We were afraid of surveillance. And so you couldn't necessarily trust people around you. I think that's where it's coming from, but it's also got a medical angle to it. So you could read it into AIDS, although Carpenter has said that's not the case, but it might've been in the back of his head. It's really cool. Okay. I love The Frighteners. The Frighteners is great. It's a very underrated Peter Jackson movie. One of my favorite scenes in it is Jeffrey Combs from The Reanimator, I think is like an FBI agent. And he talks about his roadmap to pain because he had done all these cults and things. And then he takes off his shirt in the back and he's got all these wicked scars. I love that movie. I love that Biff, whoever it is that plays Biff, I can't remember the guy's name, and Michael J. Fox are together, like a little Back to the Future reunion. I think that movie is just fantastic. Just a fun, cheap PG-13 horror movie. A lot of times PG-13 horror movies kind of suck, but that one holds up, I think. Favorite Tarantino movie? I think the best one overall, when you look at like cultural impact and just like how tight the story is, it's probably Pulp Fiction. I think his masterpiece is Inglourious Basterds. I just think the way that that suspense is put out in the movie is masterful. But if I'm being very honest, my favorite movie is Kill Bill. And I consider them One Piece, Volume 1 and Volume 2. If I had to pick one between the two, I would say 2, which I know is not the popular answer, but it's because the cinematography, the black and white stuff that they do is just fantastic. All of the story is in the second one, but I can't say anything negative about the first one. I love those movies, dude. They're so much fun. Let's see, what else do I got here? Yeah, definitely did get Second Life on VHS and cable. The Thing, going back to that. Yeah, it's one of those ones. It was definitely a slow build cult classic. Okay, Mike Lee's Secrets and Lies. I haven't seen it. I'm sorry. So I'll check that one out. I'm going to put that on my list right now. Since I said it in the video, I'll make sure. I'm such a nerd, dude. I have a whole list of stuff on Google Docs of movies to watch. Grindhouse. Okay. I love Grindhouse. I think it's extremely underrated. It might be Tarantino's half of it, might be his least good movie, but I still think it's a good movie. I went to it in a drive-in theater in Centralia, Washington, and it was on a double feature with Snakes on a Plane. Amazing night. So much fun. But my girlfriend at the time was not having a fun time at the movies. She didn't like Snakes on a Plane. And then it went into Rodriguez's half, Planet Terror, which most people would say is the best half. I would agree. Then it goes into Tarantino's half, and that saved the night for me with my girlfriend because it was a lot of women talking together, and she just loved that. Like, she loved hearing the conversations, and I was like, thank God. On top of it, my dad used to force movies on me all the time. I'm not going to lie, I do it to my daughter sometimes too. I try not to. I try to find stuff she would legitimately like, but sometimes I get in that dad space where I'm like, hey, you should watch this movie, you'll really like it. And she doesn't a lot of the time, but I try. But my dad made me watch Vanishing Point, which is this race car movie, and it was so lame. And then he realized it was lame while he's watching it. It had not aged very well. But because I had watched that, I got all of these references that were in Death Proof. Tom's, I'm glad that's one of your favorites. It should have more champions, honestly. It's fun. And I just think people, I don't know, it was this period for Tarantino after Kill Bill where people were kind of sliding off of Tarantino a little bit, but I really liked it. I had a fun time going to see it. So if anybody else has any other movies, what are a couple weird ass movies? Let me think. I watched one by A24, and I'm trying to remember the name of it, but it was basically this woman is smoking these joints, and she's putting formaldehyde in it because she's trying to die. And she's like, well, first she accidentally gives it to somebody else. She mixes up because somebody wants like a euthanasia joint. And so they're kind of doing it under the table, and the guy dies. And then she's doing it herself because her life is kind of miserable. And that was a super weird, unsettling movie. I think it's like right up some people's alleys. A lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, because it's a weird ass movie, are going to be turned off. That's the one that comes to mind. Death Race 2000. I don't know if we're talking about the new one or the old one. I think Death Race 2000 is the old one, right? Because it's just Death Race for the reboot. I'm not a fan of the reboots. I love the original Death Race 2000, man. It's so corny. It's so great. Watching Sylvester Stallone as Machine Gun Kelly is just ridiculous. The cars look so stupid. I love that movie to death. It's just one of those ones. It's kind of comfort food for me now. I watched it because I was going to have a cult movie guy on a podcast I was doing, and it didn't work out for whatever reason. But I watched like, I think 12 different cult movies because it was all in a documentary that he was producing. And Death Race 2000 was one that I'd always meant to watch that was on the list. I literally watched all 12 so that I could be well-versed and talk to him. And I've watched Death Race 2000 three or four times since then. This was like 3 years ago. So, you know, I've watched it a bunch in a short amount of time, but it's a great movie. What are some of your guilty pleasures? Guilty pleasures. Okay. There's one, and I haven't watched it for a few years, but the first one that comes to mind is a movie called The Cutting Edge. This movie I'm familiar with because when I was a kid in the 80s, it played on HBO nonstop. And we were one of those families that, like, sometimes we had cable, sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we had HBO, sometimes we didn't. It directly tied in with my mom's paychecks, I think. When we were doing well, we had cable and HBO. When we weren't, we didn't. But because of that, there's all these 80s movies that I saw over and over and over and over again, because whatever movie was playing on HBO was typically better than anything else that we could get on cable. And so The Cutting Edge used to play, and it's about this hockey player who, for some reason, I think it's like a vision thing, he can't play hockey anymore. And so he starts ice skating, and he falls in love with his partner because he's doing like a partner thing, I think, for the Olympics. I haven't seen it for a long time, but I unabashedly love that movie. And I think I'm turning red because it's a weird one to admit. I don't think I've ever admitted it out in public before. But yeah, that's definitely a guilty pleasure of mine. There's so many of them. Honestly, I love a lot of really bad movies. I watched Killer Clowns from Outer Space, and I love that movie as a kid, and I watch it now and I'm like, not very good, but I still kind of love it because it's like a nostalgia hit for me. The Car, I'm not familiar with that one. The Bear season 2, I saw the first 4 episodes. I watched them last night. I was planning on doing a run through today and trying to finish it up. I'm going to try. Dude, The Bear is just simply the best show on TV to me. I really love that show. I actually work part time in a kitchen. I'm a dishwasher when I'm not cutting audio or teaching or soon running a radio station. I actually may have gotten a job as a professor, which is crazy to me, teaching people how to podcast. So I've got a lot of things coming up, but I love The Bear. And because I work in a kitchen, I watch that and I'm like, somebody here and the writing staff worked in a kitchen, because I feel like most movies, when you watch them, when they're about a restaurant, they're about the waiter or they're about the owner. And I kind of chalk this up to like LA writers. A lot of people do gigs as waiters or caterers, or they're just sitting in a restaurant and they observe people working. So they see the front of staff. Nobody ever talks about the back of staff. The Bear gets everything right. The lingo with the hands, behind, knife, all of that stuff. When they're shouting out that stuff, that is things that actually happen in a kitchen. That is the regular vernacular. The types of people that are in it are absolutely people I've worked with. Like, they are almost archetypes of people I've worked with. Every single one of them, I've worked with some version of that person before. So they really, really understand kitchens. And I like to watch reality shows on kitchens. Like, I'm just not a reality show guy, but this show really, really gets it right. In particular, that 4th episode, when I watched the 4, really, really spoke to me. Just watching the guy very quietly learning from the British guy how to make the desserts, and just sort of taking in life and getting, you know, a piece of like the serenity that he does not get at home because of various conditions, like his mother, just the hectic nature of working in a kitchen, and just watching him actually like take in some life while he's learning this trade and becoming really good at it. That show is just fantastic. Okay, Wheels of Terror. Man, I'm not familiar with that one either. I'm not a big car guy, if I'm being honest. I have seen some car movies. I'm guessing that's a car movie. I don't know, but let's see. Reminds me of Uncut Gems, where voices are like being thrown down everywhere and it's just anarchy. Yeah, dude. So people don't talk about the soundscape of Uncut Gems enough. Being somebody who produces it, I realize like how grating some of the music and the sounds can be in that movie for people. But I think that's kind of the point. Like, that movie is just making you feel an anxiety attack, and definitely parts of The Bear make you feel like you're having an anxiety attack. They get the rushes right and things like that. But Uncut Gems, you can just see when you're watching this, he's never at rest. Like, Adam Sandler is just, he's being assaulted on all ends because he needs that hit from gambling that, you know, winning will only pay off for him. When he finally gets it at the end, and then everything's calm and serene, and you sort of realize like that's why this guy is, because he's addicted to this anxiety, but he's also addicted to the feeling you get when it ends. I really like the ending of that movie. I won't spoil it. People haven't seen it, but it's very fitting for everything that you've seen in that movie, because there was no other possibility for that ending, if you're being real at all. Anybody else got anything you want me to talk about? I'm sorry, Thomas, I've said no to a lot of stuff. I just haven't seen a lot of the stuff you're throwing out at me, but I would love to like say yes on something. Let's see. While we're waiting, I was watching Get Out last night for like the fourth time. I love that movie. A little touch that I never picked up on before is like there's a little bit of color theory running through it. And what I mean is if you look at all the white characters, they're wearing a piece of black somewhere on their clothes. And if you look at all the black characters, they're wearing a piece of white somewhere on their clothes. And the only exception that I picked up was when you get the girlfriend at the end, she's wearing pure white and drinking milk. And I think anybody who's seen Get Out will understand what I'm getting at with the color theory here. I don't want to break it down in case somebody hasn't seen it, because that is a movie, even a couple of years out, just shouldn't be spoiled. So opinions about Nick Cage's last horror movies. Okay, so I think the last one he did was Renfield, unless I'm missing something. I did see Renfield. I love Renfield. I'm a big Universal Monsters fan. I used to watch him when I was a little kid. I was actually thinking about doing a radio show on Universal Monsters. I'm kind of shelving it. I just got too many things on my plate right now. I would like to come back to it. But one of the things that I just fell in love with again was watching the original Dracula and realized there's parts of the movie that are kind of boring, but like there's parts that are amazing. But that Renfield character, man, he's codependent. It's definitely a toxic relationship he's in. And so I think it's really interesting watching that movie to actually just pull at that thread and be like, okay, well, let's just name it and then really live there. I also think it's exactly what I wanted out of the movie. It's like 20% more than I wanted, which is amazing. I wanted to go there and I wanted to see something that wasn't afraid to be bloody and that was very funny. It was absolutely that. I mean, the fight scenes where he's like ripping off somebody's arm and beating people to death with the arm, it was hilarious in just that wrong way. It kind of reminded me of a little bit later, I went to Evil Dead Rise and I did not see it on opening night. I saw it on the night after opening night because I couldn't go. And there was a part where one of the characters just projectile vomits and I just started laughing really loud. And I'm not like a disgusting dude, but sometimes stuff like that, when it's so over the top, makes me laugh. I get tones of that in the other movie, if you get what I'm saying. But Nick Cage has been in a lot of horror movies, and I think the way that he dials it up is just fantastic. Yeah, Evil Dead Rise is awesome. I really like it. I think it's Color Out of Shape. I wasn't a big fan of that one. I saw what they were trying to do. Didn't really resonate with me so much. I do love Nick Cage when he dials up to crazy Cage. I watched Mom and Dad a while ago. I really love that movie. And I think for parents, it's like, it's secretly one of those movies where you're like, yeah, this would be awesome. But like, you know, you could never go there, but it's kind of fun to watch. It's like wish fulfillment on screen a little bit when your kids are being bratty. My kids are old enough now where that's not really an issue. The fact that it took a swing that it did is nuts, and I really enjoyed it. I have seen Gerald's Game. The book didn't really grab me. I thought the movie did a better job. I think it elevated the book a bit. I like Gerald's Game. It was all right. My favorite horror director, I mean, we just talked about him. It's John Carpenter. He's just got so many amazing movies. The Thing, They Live. But also, Jordan Peele is knocking on the door. Honestly, I love Jordan Peele because he makes me think every time I go into one of his movies. Get Out was just, it was so much better than it had any right to be. And then I thought Us was amazing. I actually like Us more than most people do. I love pulling that apart and looking for all the duality in that movie. And I've really got to watch his new one some more. I watched it in the theater and I liked it, but I was like, I'm not sure I like it as much as the other two. But I also felt like there was a lot, you know. I thought the cinematography was pretty cool because I saw it on a really big screen, and when you're sitting there looking through the sky looking for that saucer thing, it was just a really cool effect. I thought there was a lot of stuff about being seen and unseen on a camera and about animal cruelty and trauma. Like, that there was a lot of amazing stuff in there, but I think I have to give it at least one more watch to unpack it. So yeah, Jordan Peele's up there. He's knocking on the door, John Carpenter, but as it stands right now, John Carpenter is the best to me. It's just like there's so many of his movies that I love, and listed out two of the really big ones. I like Dark Star. I just like it. It's a super small movie. It was like, I think, almost a student film that he did with Dan O'Bannon, who like wound up writing Aliens and doing Return of the Living Dead. And I really like Dark Star. I think it's like a fun satire. Let's see what else. I mean, honestly, the original Assault on Precinct 13 is kind of a zombie movie, but with like thugs. And I think that's a lot of fun. I love Escape from New York. That's in no way a horror movie, but I love it. You know, there's horrific elements, I guess, in Big Trouble in Little China where the guy blows up. I love that movie. Yeah, I could go on and on. Like Carpenter's the guy for me. He's my favorite for sure. All right. Do I like remakes like Friday the 13th? I'll be honest, I haven't watched it. I have a soft spot for Jason Voorhees for sure. I have a soft spot for Freddy Krueger, although man, is Freddy Krueger not aged well. Just nothing about him has aged well, but I still have a bit of a soft spot for it. I have not watched the remakes. I'm not like big into Michael Bay, and I didn't really like that. I know he was remaking the movies, so I tend to not check out things that Michael Bay does. Michael Bay does have one or two movies I like. I like The Rock. Bad Boys is good, but you know, I'm not a big fan of his in general, so I just kind of avoided them. But it was specifically because of that. I would be down to give them a shot if somebody thinks it's actually worth it, or honestly, if I'm ever doing it on a podcast, I'll literally watch any movie for a podcast. Expectation of Alien and Romulus. You know, I haven't seen that, but Alvarez, he's the one that did the Evil Dead remake. I did see that. I liked that quite a bit. It was a really good movie. So yeah, I should check that out. I've always meant to watch more of his filmography. If I'm getting the right guy, I might have the wrong guy here. Okay. Love hearing your thoughts. This is just fun, random. What's a movie you just didn't get? For me, it's Bo is Afraid, Annihilation, Enemy. Okay. I haven't seen Annihilation yet. It's one of those ones I keep meaning to watch, but it's always a bad time. Bo is Afraid I went to in the theater. Okay, here's the thing. I really liked it. I went with my friend who used to be co-host of Cosmic Void, Jeremiah, because we both really like Ari Aster. We enjoyed it. I understand people who didn't get it or didn't like it. I fully understand that. It's made to be frustrating. That movie is, it's the definition of this movie is not for everybody. In fact, I would say it's not for like 95% of people. I liked it. I just thought it was about anxiety and things that will really drive you crazy. And everything felt like a dark dream where it's just like your worst fears come true constantly in that movie, right? Like he's going back to his apartment. There's some crazy tattooed bald guy who's homeless, who's like running after him, and he immediately runs into the place. He leaves his key in the door for like 5 seconds. The key is snatched away. The penis monster I haven't totally unpacked, but it was really fun seeing a penis monster. I don't know, the Mariah Carey song playing to that sex scene and then having her die. It was nuts. So I just loved it because it was so fucked up, if I'm being honest. Like there was stuff to pull apart for sure, but I don't think it's like something where you're coming away with a clear theme necessarily. So I understand like people not getting it. I think I got it, but it's hard to say with the movie like that. That movie was fucking wild. And you're saying it's absolutely a crazy masterpiece. I do agree, with the caveat that I think it's going to be a masterpiece for like the small section of people. You are my people. Absolutely. Like I consider it on par with Midsommar and Hereditary, but I totally understand people not getting that because those other two movies are accessible enough for most people, right? Even Midsommar is starting to get not accessible for people, but the bear suit thing happens and people can at least laugh about that, and so they enjoy it from that. Bo is Afraid, it does not want you to like it. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those dudes who's just like, I hate the Beatles. The Beatles fucking suck. That is essentially what Bo is Afraid is for the cinema goers. Yeah, Midsommar is great. I went to that with my wife and she was not happy. And then she fell asleep about 2/3 of the way through the movie. I was riveted. I used to do some hallucinogens when I was young. I have not done them for a long, long time. That was my youth for sure. But I watched that and I was like, you know what? This is the first movie I've seen that actually gets what it looks like with hallucinogens, the way things slowly start to shimmer and like get bigger and smaller and the way it contracts. They really, really nailed that. Thoughts on The Witch or The Vivitch, depending on who you're talking to. Love the director. Absolutely love him. Did not get The Witch the first time I watched it. Decided to give his next one a go, The Lighthouse. Love The Lighthouse. Absolutely loved it. Framed out like it was a Universal monster movie, like the 4:3 aspect ratio, the black and white, the unseen horror, all of that stuff. It just really, really worked for me. Then saw his next one with The Vikings. That was an amazing movie. I mean, it's based off of the tale that Macbeth was based off of. And I do love the story of Macbeth. So I thought that was really cool. And it's made me want to go back and watch The Witch again, because I'm betting it was just a bad moment. My daughter I feel like she had just been born and we were watching her. So I probably was not in the mood to watch The Witch. I have to hold myself to account and be like, I was probably not in the right headspace for that movie. Have you guys seen Over the Top? I finally watched Over the Top a little while ago because I'm doing the sports movie podcast, Fields of Glory, and I'm just looking for movies to talk about. And let me just tell you the premise of that movie. So it is Sylvester Stallone is a truck driver. He goes to pick up his son who's in military school, and he's going to reconnect with him because his mom's dying of cancer. And then he's also traveling to an arm wrestling competition where the winner gets a nicer truck to haul stuff with. Meanwhile, the boy's grandfather, who's the mother's father, he is over the top, crazy, rich guy who wants him out of his life. And the mother is talking to Sylvester Stallone because Sylvester Stallone left when the kid was a baby because of the grandfather. And she's like, you just have to meet him halfway. And he's like, oh, girl, I'll try and do it. And like, that looks like it's going to be the theme of the movie. But the theme of the movie is cocaine. Like, it's not said, but it's cocaine, dude. It's nuts. Like, there is a part where the kid goes back with the grandfather. Sylvester Stallone wants him back. And so he drives his truck through these iron gates and then right through the door, and then walks through to get the kid. The movie is exactly what the title is. It is over the top. It's crazy. It's hilarious in the ways that it's crazy. I think at that point in the 80s, people may not have looked at that as all that crazy. Weirdly enough, we were at a place in cinema where it's just like, yeah, we understand this. Like, I don't know, man. It was a weird time. But over the top is good. So I'm actually going to kill this. I think I've been going for a little bit. But thank you, everybody, for throwing out stuff. I'm never sure who's watching this or who actually has thoughts. So I appreciate you guys. Check out Fields of Glory. Let's see. I think on Monday, we talk about Any Given Sunday. There's an extra long episode on Patreon, and it is extra long. It's like an hour 45. I think I cut it down to 50 minutes, I think, for the podcast. Particular one, we had so many thoughts, just so many things, and it was very funny. And the first edit I did, I was in a bad mood and I didn't nail it. And it was the one episode that my partner was like, hey man, you need to go back and do this again. Like, this isn't right. And he had some criticisms and I knew he was right. So I was like, fuck. So I had to wait like 2 days to like get it out of my head a little bit and edit it again, but I'm very proud of the one that's up there. But also, if you guys ever want to help us out a little bit, it's like $5 on Patreon, you get everything. So thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you all. Have yourselves a great Saturday night.
Cosmic Void was created by Alex Small and Jeremiah Perez. It's hosted by Alex Small. Produced by Aaron Donaldson and Alex Small. The theme song Duke of New York A No. 1 was written by Dub Campbell and Greg Vivrette. The song is performed by Tonight We Ride. A Cosmic Void is a Redwood Sound Labs production.
Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help...
All right.
Hear Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genres. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.